Welcome to the Inside Mommy Athletics Podcast, where we bring you reports of the Panthers' athletic scenes.
And I'm your host, Jeremy Schneider. Thanks for tuning in. It might be freezing cold outside, but it's been a hot few weeks for Mommy Athletics. First off, congratulations to Lucy Porter for joining the 1,000 point club at Mommy. She's only the fourth girls player in school history to reach that career milestone. It's been special watching her growth and development as a basketball player over these last few years, and I can't believe we're almost at the end of the road. She's absolutely earned the title as one of the best to ever do it at Maumee. If she keeps up her current scoring average, she could move into second place on the all-time scoring list. What an incredible career for a truly special student athlete. Congrats also go out to Maumee star football player Cody Wolf. He recently committed to play football at Division II Northwood University in Midland, Michigan. It looks like Wolf will play linebacker in college, and the Timberwolves are getting a special player. They play in the same conference as Findlay, Tiffin, and Hillsdale, and they finished 6-5 last season. And finally, Maumee sophomore bowler Faith Parker has been on a tear this season. A few weeks ago, she broke the school record for highest series, and then she broke her own record again just last week. She's averaging a 200 game over the last 3 weeks. What a great talent on the lanes for the Panthers. The Maumee Athletic Boosters meet the first Wednesday of each month at 7 p.m. in the High School Learning Commons. If you'd like to support the student athletes at Maumee High School and Maumee Middle School, you should consider getting involved. To find the full meeting schedule, find them on social media. We'll see you at the next meeting. Our guest this week is a legendary Maumee football player who's had an even more impressive career since graduating. After playing for the great Hal LaFontaine at Maumee, he went on to Ohio State and played for both John Cooper and Jim Tressel. He's now made a name for himself as a head coach, going 85-20 at Notre Dame College in Ohio, Lenoir Rhine in North Carolina, and now Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. In his first season at Mercer last year, the Bears went 11-3, winning the Southern Conference title and qualifying for the NCAA Division I FCS tournament. Here's my talk with Mike Jacobs. I guess talk about your time at Maumee. Of course, I'm going to start there. How did that, you played underneath a legendary coach like Coach LaFontaine. How did that really kind of set you up for the success you found both as a player and now as a coach? What type of things did you experience there that maybe kind of set this up?
I really think that there was, just early on the winning culture, there was couple classes ahead of me. I was part of that 94 team that made the playoffs, which would have been my sophomore season. And, Coach LaFontaine had just done a really good job. There was a bunch of energy and excitement around the program. There was a pretty significant commitment to the weight room at that time, which I don't know, you're talking 25 plus years ago now. I don't know that it was always that way for a lot of folks, but there was a number of us on that roster that aspired to play college football at varying levels and that did. And, Hal was just, he was a tremendous leader. He's a little bit gruff, but, I had a lot of respect for how he ran the program and what he did. And, I always felt with Coach Conroy as well, who was my position coach, that, I was well taught and well coached. Obviously I had a little bit of a different and unique, maybe in-depth background with my dad having been a college coach. So, spent all the summers, my folks were divorced. So every summer was spent in my dad's house in West Virginia and going to their camps back in the day for 3 and 4 days at a time. And, I felt like before I got to high school, I had a pretty solid base from football. But, you know, I thought Hal did a good job with the culture piece. We had good older guys in front of me. Matt LaVar was, you know, somebody that stands out who ended up being a teammate at Ohio State. Jim Harding, who's actually in coaching now as well. He's the run game coordinator and offensive line coach at Utah. So he was just a year older than me. But there, you know, Justin Banks, there was a number of guys who went on to play college football that you know, were quite successful.
You mentioned culture there, culture, and that's something that in talking with Cam Kuchar and now Evan Karchner, their current coach, they're big on the culture. Can you talk a little bit about that, both as a player and as a coach, trying to establish that culture and what that means for the success of a program?
I mean, culture, right? Like, it's what you do, it's what you say, it's what you allow. And I think that that's both from a player's perspective as well as a coach's perspective. And I think that, you know, I think when you can clearly define what the mission of a team or a program is, whatever that may be, you know, right? Ours is to graduate student athletes. Ours is to win the Southern Conference Championship. Ours is to make the national playoffs. Ours is to, you know, lead the country in community service. Like, if you have very identifiable and marked goals, then I think you can tailor what you allow and what you expect from a practice setting in all aspects. And I think that, you know, I've been blessed. I've been around a lot of good coaches, and, you know, it started with Coach LaFontaine in high school and kind of just that expectation to win with some older guys that did stuff the right way. And then, you know, just having been around it with my dad, I was around Don Nealon for 15 years. He was a College Football Hall of Famer. And then, you know, played for John Cooper, played for Jim Tressel, both in the Hall of Fame. Had an opportunity to work for Joe Tiller, who's in the Hall of Fame. John Luckhart, same deal. And so I've just been kind of remarkably blessed to be around some all-timers that, you know, do it different ways. And so I've been able to take a little from each person and kind of build my own identity as a coach, and then, you know, work to establish those parameters of what we want.
You kind of took one of my questions right out of my mouth there, all those legendary coaches that you've been able to play for or coach underneath. So maybe I'll take it a little bit differently here and look specifically at that Cooper to Tressel transition. I grew up in Columbus, so I'm a gigantic Ohio State guy, Ohio State fan. What was the transition like? I mean, and maybe this is just for my own personal question. Maybe sure. No one else will get anything out of it. But what was that transition like going from the last part of the Cooper years and then Tressel comes in? What was that transition like for you as a player?
Well, I think it was, you know, the just personality types. They're both just unbelievably brilliant coaches in different ways. You know, John was about winning. John was about recruiting. And John was about the person just in a different way. I don't know that I've ever been around anybody that cares to spend the time like Jim Tressel does to get to know people inside and out, what makes them tick. And I think that personality quirk and just almost an undescribable commitment to the small details of things is what Tressel brought. And that's probably more of what we needed at that point. We probably need to be reined in, you know, from like a discipline standpoint at the time. And, you know, just concentrating more on some of the small details. I would say Coop was a very big picture guy, and, you know, we did a lot of winning, but just Coach Tressel's emphasis on the person is really unmatched.
The Mirror newspaper has been a supporter of IMA from the very beginning. If quality journalism is important to you, please consider becoming a subscriber. You can head to their website at themirrornewspaper.com to find more information on becoming a traditional print or digital subscriber.
When you were a student at Maumee and looking to play college football, I mean, I won't say every, but most kids in Ohio Ohio State's where they want to go. Was that the way for you? Was it Ohio State or bust, or were there other schools on the list? Or
no, my recruitment was very unique, right? Like, so I'm a tweener. I was an offensive lineman, but I'm 6 foot one and some change on the greatest day of my life. I get shorter by the moment. And so I was a little bit on, you know, not traditional size wise, but I did have, you know, an incredible skill that I could long snap at a really high level. And so with my dad being a coach, he was like, listen, look at everybody. Like, I don't care what level it is, go get around the people, see how you feel around the players. And so, you know, I had opportunities obviously at the highest level in the Big Ten. You know, West Virginia always kind of felt like home to me. That's where I wanted to play growing up.
Yeah.
Even with my dad being at Ohio State at the time. But, you know, it came down to it with my folks having been split up and, you know, growing up around big time football, I made the decision that Ohio State was really the best thing for me. But listen, I looked at Division III schools. I looked at Wittenberg. Both my parents are Wittenberg alumni. And so looked at really every school in the MAC. At the time, if they were looking at me, and you know, just I was kind of all over the map. I really enjoyed a trip I had to Dayton on a handful of visits there, and so you know, when it came down to it, I wanted to be at a bigger college, and I wanted to play at the highest level, knowing that if it didn't work out, then maybe I could always transfer down. And so again, I was a little bit all over the map, you know. Where I wasn't a blue chip kid by any stretch, but I was pretty darn good. And then I had the ability to long snap it at a really, really high level. And that was as much of my bus ticket as anything, you know, to play big time college football.
What was the plan always to become a coach? Was that something you were always planning on doing?
Yeah. I mean, as long as I can remember, that's really, really, I mean, from middle school on, I just knew. I grew up and seeing the way that the players reacted to my father and how close he was to his position group, the offensive line, camaraderie, and then the camaraderie he had with the fellow coaches, like, I don't know, it's just something I grew up kind of knowing that I wanted and craving. And, you know, knew right away as soon as I was done, you know, with my college career that's the direction that I want to go, that I want to secure graduate assistantship and you know, begin my journey in college football.
So do you feel like maybe you approached football a little bit differently than some other guys who think maybe when football's over, I'm going to go into this business or this or this? Did you approach it a little bit differently with that in mind, knowing that this is my lifetime and I'm going to just transition into a different part of it?
I don't think so. I think I was like a lot of kids, man. I like most college kids, I was one day at a time. You know, I probably could have had better foresight and spent a little more time. You know, I was always in the office when my dad was there, but I don't know how much I was learning as opposed to just kind of hanging out, you know, and then as it wore on and I played for different O-line coaches, you know, I probably could have spent a little more time in there. I don't know. I knew that's what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to have a big network of individuals that maybe didn't do it exactly the way Ohio State did. And I don't know. I think I just kind of went day by day.
You know, you've kind of been all over 20 years or so in the coaching profession. So kind of big picture here, what's been the thing that's, or things that have kind of changed the most about being a coach and being about the sport specifically? I mean, I know we've got NIL and the transfer portal and we can hit on that, but is there anything outside of those about the sport of football that's really changed a lot in the last few years?
I mean, specific to the kids, I feel like there's, I don't know that they think a little more in depth, but there's a great need for them to know why. More often than not, you know, like Hal Fontaine just told me to do something. If not, I ran two laps and, you know, like you just did it and it was kind of unquestioned and you went from there. And it's not that kids balk or do anything, you know, it's not that there's back talk always sometimes, but I think their want to know why they're doing something a certain way or how will this skill set lead to them having their success, I think is I think has grown over the years. I find them to be a little more inquisitive that way, and wanting to know why they're doing things as opposed to just kind of blindly doing them because somebody told them to do it that way. I think you gotta build out why you're doing things. But other than that, man, I mean, it's the portal. I mean, the portal, yeah. The NIL. I mean, that's. I mean, it changes daily. Honestly, it's kind of painstaking.
Yeah. Well, I'll get to that in a second. With you know, the kids needing to know why. And it's funny you say that because I've had other coaches say that to me. How important is it as a coach, as somebody that leads young people, to be able to adjust? Because what was true for, and I graduated from high school in 95. So what was true for us back then isn't true now. So as a coach, how important is it for you to recognize that and be able to adjust how you do things?
Yeah, I look at it kind of like guardrails, right? Like there are some things that I just won't, that they are firmly in the ground and I won't bend or break on.
Right.
Whether it's right or wrong. But I think the ability to, you know, adaptability is the greatest thing right now, right? I read an article the other day. They were talking about how, you know, Notre Dame is handling recruiting while they're still playing 3 weeks into January. And, you know, they're sending off the field personnel, they got waivers. And so your ability to adapt as a coach, both in how students learn, because their time on task is shorter than it's ever been, right? They're in an instant gratification society. So understanding that, you know, an hour and a half meeting probably isn't good because you've lost them 20 minutes into it. Unless there's some sort of recall or, you know, interaction where they're being forced to interact with you. So I think that stuff's, but yeah, I mean, the ability to be pliable, the ability to, the willingness to adapt. But then just have some things that, like, you have to have certain beliefs that are kind of the foundation of why you're successful as a coach. But then as you navigate the day to day that is college football now, especially, and just coaching and leading in general, you know, I think you have to adapt with kids, their attention span, their learning spectrum, you know, what they relate to, how they think. And then, you know, ultimately it's, right? Like, can you get them to do it? Like, can you put it in terms, right? Like, I was never very good at math. So somebody had to really always dumb it down for me to get it right, you know? And, but they had to put it in terms that made sense to me. And I think it's no different in football. It's teaching, and you got to find a way to connect with them. And then you got to have the willingness, especially with the recruiting side of things, to be pliable and adapt.
Extremely lucky to have the Pride of the Panthers helping us make memories for our students. There aren't many communities or schools who have a group of talented photographers at almost all of our kids' events and games. You can follow them on Facebook by searching Pride of the Panthers.
So let's take it back to the NIL and the portal. I mean, that's just completely changed everything. And I've had conversations with some people. How do you as a head coach manage that? I mean, do you change staff members' focuses to be able to handle these things? Or it's just adding a whole other layer of things on there that you didn't have 5 years ago. It's incredible.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, right? I spent a number of years at the Division II level, and you know, the Division II level, there's only 36 scholarships, right? You got FBS, you got Ohio State and Michigan, they got 80 currently, they have 85 scholarships, and you're either on a full ride or you're on nothing at all. Then you got the FCS level where I'm at now here at Mercer, and you know, places like Youngstown State, and we have 63 equivalencies. Why an equivalency? It's still a scholarship, but I can break it up into smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. And then at the Division II level, currently, as we sit today, because it's all probably going to change soon, they have 36. And so as I spent time at the Division II level, the management of 36 scholarships is essentially a salary cap, right? Like you have to learn to place priority on certain positions, and your quarterback better be on the most scholarship money, no different than the NFL. And so that's really all I'm doing now with more scholarships and NIL money is I have to place a premium on the positions and the people that I think are the we can't miss or can't live without. And so I've really been doing it, you know, yes, but the Division II, I think, has really set me up for success in today's NIL, because that's really all it is. I'm managing a salary cap at this point is what we're doing as head coaches. And I think that that's, you know, again, my time at the Division II level, I think my time, you know, we all have other duties as assigned when you're at the lower levels, cause there's not as much staff. And, you know, I spent some time doing the football operations in addition to coaching when I was at Cal PA. And I think that went a long way for me and my growth to where I'm at here as a head coach. Cause you know, you really got to be on the details, but I think that that aspect of the NIL is maybe different than people realize. And then, you know, I think it's what you're seeing at the highest level, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the breadth of their personnel departments. I mean, they're like the NFL. I mean, yeah. You know, you go into a staff room in Ohio State right now, there's probably 60 people in there. And, you know, 10 of them, only 10 of them can be on the field, you know, the full-time on the field coaches. So what is everyone else doing? Well, it's the personnel department. You got people just like the NFL has people specific to current NFL rosters and free agents. And then there's high school scouting. You have portal scouting and you have high school scouting. And so, wow. You know, it's really just a mirror in certain areas. You know, for us, I still believe you have to build out the base of your program, the foundation. I think somewhere 75 to 80% of your roster, if you're really good programs, probably high school kids. And then you're plugging guys in that fit your culture, that you know, and education is important too, that you think can maybe take you over the edge from the portal. And that's my philosophy. It's different at other places. Some people right. are, you know, the Deion Sanders model of 60 plus guys a year rolling in and out. I hope to never be in that world, because I do believe that, you know, when you're at a place and you have guys that are bought in for a number of years, I do think there's just a little bit more buy-in that way. But, you know, we've had success in the portal. It's just about picking the right kids.
Right. Is it different hitting the portal and recruiting these guys or finding these guys when they're high school kids, 18, maybe 19 years old, and all of a sudden you're looking at a guy that's 20, 21? I mean, there's a lot of growth physically, mentally, emotionally that happens in that time. Are there different standards or there different things you're looking for from those two groups?
I mean, high school guys to me are still kind of the purest form of evaluation, right? I'm looking for offensive linemen that are 245 or 50 pound tight ends, maybe that I think their frame's big enough to grow out over 3 years, right? I'm trying to project them up where, you know, when I go in, you know, you're telling high school kids they all have a chance to compete, but they got to come in and work. Whereas if I go into the portal, like, I mean, it's almost free agency. Like I'm going into the portal to get a quarterback or a center or a defensive tackle. And I need the kid to, you know, we place a high value once we go into the portal, one, to kids who are coming back regionally to the state of Georgia, right, that we may be recruited or offered the first time. So there's a prior relationship. I think you miss less when you do that. And then I think we place an extremely high value, and our best transfer portal kids have been kids who have played significant reps wherever they're at, whatever level of competition it was, whether it was Division III or Division II or another FCS school. But the guys who have panned out the most for us are the kids who have played where they were at prior to getting here and played at a high level.
You mentioned you're down in Georgia. You know, there are certain states around Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, and Ohio are definitely two of them where high school football is a gigantic deal. Your experience there in Georgia, what's high school football down there like? Is it king like it is up here in Ohio, or what's it like?
It is. And, you know, because they've figured out how to have spring football and not have it be intrusive or hurt people's feelings, with other spring sports, I think that they, you know, there's just a tremendous commitment to it. And you see a skill development, I think, You know, we're probably getting a little bit closer to a finished product at times in certain high schools because of the community's commitment. I mean, get online sometime and look at what Buford's doing right now with their, they're building like a $70 million stadium or something. I mean, it's unbelievable. And so, you know, but for every one of those, there's a Maslin, you know? And so, you know, and just some of those tradition rich areas and things like that. But, you know, there's great high school coaches in both states, and there's certainly a high commitment for the community and the communities involved with these kids, and whether it's public or private schools.
You've had a lot of success every stop you've made, Notre Dame, Lenoir Rhyne, now at Mercer. What for you has been the through line for all that? How have you been able to find success at multiple stops and now going from Division II up to FCS? What's been the consistent thing for you?
We've been able to develop relationships and recruit incredible players.
Okay.
You know, go online sometime and look at what we had at Notre Dame College. It was a field with a chain link fence around it. And you know, we found guys and we were able to develop relationships and that's the first part, is to have great players. And we've been able to do that wherever they're from. And I think the second thing we've done a great job, or I've done a good job, probably better than anything, is hire really good assistants that are fantastic and brilliant teachers. And, you know, there's a development piece. Some guys get lazy in the portal, right? Because someone else is developing them for you, and then they transfer away, and you get to reap the rewards of someone else's is hard work to get the kid to the point where he's at. And so, you know, I still think that you have to teach to coach well, and you got to be able to develop guys. And I think recruitment of players, and then the development of them once they're on campus, and then, you know, the ability to hire, not only hire, but identify and retain high quality of assistants. A number of these guys have been with me for, you know, 6, 7, 8, and even 9, 10 years, my whole time as a head coach. And so I think that shows a commitment. I think that shows consistency. I think that shows that we're, you know, not just creating an environment for the players, but for the coaches and their families, where people want to be involved in what we're doing and how we're doing it.
As we record this, we're up here in Ohio, we're talking about getting weather down into negative 20 wind chill next week. You're down there in sunny Georgia. Do you ever miss being up in Ohio and the weather and all that? Or
from late May through September 1st, I miss the North Coast, right? Yeah. But no, every day I'm down here, it's about 60, and there's a big ball of fire in the sky. The sun's out, and it's shining here on us in Macon. I'm trying to figure out what the heck I did for 34 years above the Mason-Dixon line. But it's, you know, it's funny because, like, we're going to get a little time off here after the second signing day, and we're actually going to see some friends in the northern part of Michigan so my kids can do all things snow-related, tube, snowmobile, the whole spectrum of that stuff. But, you know, I miss the seasons. I miss fall. Like, true fall is what I miss the most about Ohio weather.
Last thing I got here for you, you played at Ohio State. There's a big game coming up on Monday. Any predictions for the game?
And I know you're wrapped
up in your own stuff, so you may not have the X's and O's, but
yeah, predictions for the game. Listen, I'll just go with the homer pick of the Buckeyes by a bunch. It's either going to be the Buckeyes by a bunch or Notre Dame close.
Right.
But I'll go by Bucks by a bunch.
Perfect. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day for me.
Yeah, you as well. I know we all have other things, but I appreciate you. And, you know, anything, we don't get back to Mommy as often as I'd like. My mother still lives right there in town. And, but we're awfully proud to have been Panthers, and I'm a big reason I'm able to be successful right now is because I had a really great experience growing up in an unbelievable town with great support. So this has been fun.
Outstanding. Great. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Jeremy.
That's the end of another Inside Mommy Athletics. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another in-depth interview. Thanks again to Mike Jacobs for taking the time to talk with me. We're very lucky to have our supporters, the Mommy Athletic Boosters, the Mirror Newspaper, and Pride of the Panthers Photographers. If you'd like to contact the podcast, email us at insidemommyathletics@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our website, insidemommyathletics.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Inside Mommy Athletics on Facebook and YouTube, and at Inside Mommy ATH on Twitter. Until next time, thanks for listening.